Going to talk about. I had two choices. My first choice was following Jesus, and my second choice was turkeys in the road. So I went with turkeys in the road. And I'll explain that in a minute. This morning, I want to talk about following Jesus with you. And you know, Jesus said it in the New Testament. Jesus, that term, follow me, anyone take a guess on how many times that's recorded in the New Testament? Take a crack at it?
Lots.
Yeah, 70 times we have a record of him telling somebody to follow them. And I think it's interesting. What comes into your mind when you think of following Jesus? What picture do you get in your mind if it's following Jesus? Sometimes I think of somebody who's walking and who can be walking in front of me, like, "Oh, come on, will you? Come on! Just would you hurry up? Come on!" I mean, that's one way of following. And then there's another one of following. Another idea of following is like, "Well, I know he's out there somewhere and he's up ahead, but I've lost sight of him. So I think this is the right way." All of us, I think, can have different views or different thoughts, don't we, on what that term following Jesus is. What I think is pretty neat is I did a little study on this. That term follow has more to do with the Greek definition that I came across was that more to do with being a companion of someone and basically going in the same direction as that person. And I like that. I like that when we start thinking about if you're going to follow Jesus, what you're really saying is what Jesus is saying to you. If I'm going to ask you to follow me, what he's not saying is that keep up if you can because I'm going. No, what he's actually saying is that I'm going in a direction, and that direction is doing the will of my Father. And I want to do it with you. I want you to be my companion. I want to come along. I want you to come along with me. I want to do this together. That's what following means. And for many times today, we struggle to understand what living the Christian life is supposed to look like. Is it a bunch of rules that we're just supposed to keep? And obviously, obedience is a big part of our Christian life. But I like to think of our Christian life is that of a journey. The metaphor of being, you're on a journey. Recently, my wife watched a Lord of the Rings with us, all three of them. So you guys have all seen Lord of the Rings before? Have you seen that? Great. Not her biggest fan of the movie. She hasn't liked it, but she said, you know what, I'll watch it with you. So we watched all three. Very, very interesting movie to watch. Great movie. The main character, Frodo, is on this long quest to destroy this ring. And the whole movie, three episodes worth, are just about his journey. There's ups and downs and all around. In a way, I think that's what my Christian life kind of looks like. It's a journey. And I would imagine that it's a journey for you too right now. Where are you at in your journey? Are you at a place of maybe peace and refreshment? Or maybe you're just walking through a period of your life right now. You're just wondering, where the heck am I? You don't even know. Well, this morning I thought it could be kind of neat to talk a little bit about the text I would like to talk about is in Luke 5, 1 through 11. So if you got a Bible, you can turn there. But as you're turning there, I'd like to tell you a little bit why I'm thinking about turkeys in the road. Not too long, but a few days before Christmas, my son Zach was driving across town from where he was living, and I live in Ridgefield, so it's the highway it's the back road from Ridgefield to Ridgefield downtown towards Vancouver. Bob, what's the name of that street? Yeah, in Phillida. We're close to Phillida, so you can tell I hardly know where I live. I've only lived here for 4 years now. And on the way over, Zach was driving over, and he said, "Dad, you're not going to believe this." And I said, "What?" And he said, "Well, I'm driving over, and I noticed halfway to your house, traffic was completely stopped." And he says, "There were just turkeys everywhere." somebody's turkeys had gotten out. And so they were all over the road. And so he had told me, you know, he said, I got right up there and there's just a big turkey just standing right in front of him. And the traffic was just stopped up. And every time he like honked at it, it's like, you know, just kind of fighting him off, you know. And so he finally got around him. So he got to my house, and then we were going back there. And sure enough, on my drive back, there they were. I mean, there were turkeys over, but there was one particular turkey standing in the road. And you know what turkeys look like when they get angry, I guess. I don't know, but it's like they just get up like that and have like the big, all the feathers just sticking out like. And so he's standing there and people are honking, and it was pretty funny. And so and people were just kind of going around him because he just wouldn't move. And so people were just going around him, and so I got up to him and gave him a tap on the horn too, and I went around him. And I'm going to come back to that story because in a way it made me think a lot about, in my journey of following Jesus and in my travels, from time to time I run into something that stops me on my way. You ever have that? Yeah. And there's something that stops your way. And what I wanted to talk a little bit about is talk about somebody in the Bible, a story in the Bible that we have, that where this person dealt with this turkey too. Have you ever heard, I was thinking about this morning, you ever heard that saying, Lord, it's hard to soar with the eagles when you're surrounded by a bunch of turkeys? You ever heard that? You ever heard that? I've heard that one before too. But the turkey I want to talk about, the way that I want to talk about it, it's a little bit of a different, a little bit of a different twist. If you've got your Bible and you would turn, I'd like to read a little bit of this passage to you. And if you've got there, you can look on. It's in Luke chapter 5. This is towards the beginning of Luke's gospel. And Jesus had already had a relationship with his disciples to some level. According to Luke's gospel, Luke has already told us about Jesus' birth, the amazing circumstances that went around his birth. And he's also told us, leading up to chapter 5, that he's already started his ministry. He's already started healing people. He started casting out demons. And we have a story that we come upon in chapter 4, the earlier chapter, really fascinating story to me, how Jesus heals somebody. That was really, I think, very significant. He healed Peter's mother-in-law. Now, I find that really interesting, that if Peter was thinking about being a disciple of Jesus, and if Peter had like a really full-blown business going on, you know, fishing business or whatever, and if he was even thinking about dumping the business to follow Jesus, who do you think would maybe have a big problem with him doing that? The mother-in-law. And so that's a side note. I wasn't even going to go there a whole lot. But anyways, Luke was intentional about telling us that, because this happened right before this event. And let me read this, and then we'll continue on. Once, while Jesus was standing beside the Lake of Gennesaret, and the crowd was pressing in on him to hear the word of God. That Lake Gennesaret is another word for the Sea of Galilee. It's in that upper Judea area. And he saw two boats at the shore at the lake, and fishermen had gotten out of them and were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats. He, being Jesus, of course, got into one of the boats belonging to Simon and asked him to put out a little way from the shore. And then he sat down and taught the crowds from the boat. A few interesting things to point out on that. You guys ever been out on a boat on a lake, or when you're fishing, and sometimes you can hear people's conversation when they're out in the lake and they don't know you hear them, you know, because what happens to sound when you're on the water? Well, it travels, doesn't it? It just travels. And so Jesus, this was kind of like a Galilean PA system for him. He figured, I've got all these crowds in here and I can only yell so loud, but if I get out into the water and I speak, well, then my words will just travel more. So he puts him out so he can begin teaching. And meanwhile, these two sets of brothers, the two sets of brothers had come in from their fishing earlier and had been cleaning their nets. And then when he had finished speaking, Jesus said to Simon, "Put out in the deep water and let down your nets for a catch." Now, those of you who are fishermen, how many of you are fishermen, like to fish? Yeah, a number of us are in here. You know that if you've gotten up early and you've gone out fishing all day and you've just come in and you've gotten skunked, how motivated are you to go out there and go fishing again right after you just got skunked? Not really. But besides that, this is a little bit different, because listen to Simon's response when Jesus asked him that question. "Master, we've worked hard all night and we've caught nothing." And that's an important thing to understand, because back there in that area, the fishermen fished at nighttime. What they would do is they would take their torches out and they would light a torch up, and the torch would actually attract the fish and they would just net them. So according to Peter, listening to Peter's discussion, we've worked all night and we've caught how much? Nothing. That's a lot, you know, that with this type of an operation, to say we've caught nothing, it's nothing. "But yet, if you say so, I will let down the nets." Now that sounds pretty good. "If you say so, I'll let down the nets." Which brings me to a possible turkey in Peter's life, or an obstacle in his life to following Jesus. What would you think that obstacle might be in Peter by judging from his response? The obstacle number one that I would come to: when God invites you to do something with him, what I see in this text is that it conflicted with Peter's reputation, didn't it? Peter's thinking, "Listen, I've fished, we've done all this, we haven't caught anything." It even conflicted with his knowledge. And even for Jesus asking him to do something, Peter, ultimately we're going to see, he did it. But the thing that's going on inside of him is that, what's going on inside of Peter's heart? "You can tell me to do this, but it's not going to work," correct? And I think Peter would be challenged at that point for Jesus asking him to do something that he didn't think would work well. What would happen to all these people watching? I think in Peter's mind, he's thinking, "Well, even if we do it, it's not my idea," right? "Yeah, it's not my idea. If you say so, we'll do it," you know, kind of telling everybody. And I think this brought me to one of the obstacles that I have found in my life to following Jesus. Like Peter, I have a hard time dealing with it if I feel like my reputation is going to be damaged by following Jesus. That's one of those turkeys for me that can just stop me, that can just stop me cold. Feeling my reputation is on the line. When I was in high school, I played high school football. And you know, we get the Super Bowl coming up and we have instant replay when we watch a game and everything. Well, back when I was in high school, we didn't have videos. We had the little Super 8 cameras, and after every game, the coach, they would film every game, and every Monday afternoon, we'd see the game films of how we did. Now, if I was in a game, and I remember this one particular game where I had gone and I had tackled a running back. Actually, I had him, and the guy wiggled away from me and then just ran like 80 yards down for, and scored a touchdown. And you know what was going on in my mind when I was laying in the grass just looking up and watching him run? It's like film day. I knew the films were coming. And sure enough, you know, when we'd see the films, it's like when we'd get to the point to where it was going to be my part of the film, I'd find myself just like really slinking down, because and hoping the coach maybe couldn't read my number to know that it was me that blew the play. So I found myself developing a habit, especially when it came to sports, especially when it came to playing football. I just didn't want to make a mistake. Because if I did, I know I'd have to hear about it. I don't know if any of you feel that way. But what I started to do was started to just be hyper-vigilant of thinking, I don't want to make a mistake here. So sometimes in our football practices, what our coach would do, I played defense, and so our coach would line up our next opponent's offensive formations on Monday mornings after films. And he would say, okay, this is the team you're going to be playing. This is the kind of formations they like to run, and if they run this way, if they put a back in motion this way, they're probably going to run a sweep. I raise my hand. Yes, Crawford, what is it? Well, coach, what if the guy goes in motion the other direction? He said, well, just make the adjustment and just keep an eye on him. Okay. And then a few minutes later, he'd say, you know, when the fullback lines up like this off to the side, it means they're probably going to run like a swing pass to this side. Crawford, what is it? Well, coach, I'm just wondering, but what if the fullback run goes on the other side? But this time I could tell he's getting a little annoyed with me. He's like, well, Crawford, if they run this way, then move over to the other side and just make the adjustment. Okay. And now when they run it, and then he goes on to say, now if they run it this way with two wing backs over here and the halfbacks over here, then you want to adjust it there. What now, Crawford? I said, well, coach, what if this guy goes over to here? And my coach, Coach Macy, he blew. He just blew. He took his clipboard and threw his clipboard, his glasses off, and just came, his veins were like sticking out of his neck, and just right in my face, he's like, and he said, if, Crawford, if the bear didn't stop to, you know, in the woods, he wouldn't have got shot. Now just shut up and listen. And I realize, as a 16-year-old boy, realize that I have this desire to want a second guess. I want to know what's next. I want to be ahead. I don't want to look bad, so I want to keep a step ahead. And in a way, it's like chess playing, but with God. Because I want to know that, well, if I do this, then God's going to do this. And those of you who are chess players know that a good chess player is somebody who is like 5 or 6 moves ahead. And thing is I'm a lousy chess player, but I try to do it. And I remember once having a conversation with Zach, my son, and he brought up something interesting when we were talking about my desire to be a chess player and chess playing with God. Zach said, well, Dad, it sounds like God's your opponent. And it kind of made me see, this is an obstacle for me. This is an obstacle. This is one of my turkeys that stops me from following Jesus. A desire to want to keep a step ahead. You think Peter was maybe wanting to keep a step ahead of Jesus? Could be. But the thing is about Peter is that he did it. He did follow what Jesus said. And this would be a second obstacle that I see that stops people from following Jesus, a second turkey in the road that we would run into. I'm only going to follow you after I really trust you. And sometimes if we don't trust this, if we don't trust this God, this Jesus that we're supposed to be following, then we're not going to follow. Now in Peter's situation, in his line, what had Peter seen so far from following Jesus? Well, we know he saw his mother-in-law get healed, and that was a good thing. But we also had seen him heal people, cast out demons. There's a good chance he was there to see when Jesus turned water into the wine. So Peter had seen a lot. So Peter decided, yeah, I can take this step, I think. Because even when Jesus is asking him on the boat, put down your nets for a catch, Jesus is saying, will you follow me? Will you take this step? So Peter did it. He did take the step. And let's read what happened. Simon answered to him, Master, we've worked hard all night, and we've caught nothing, but yet if you say so, I'll let down the nets. When they had done this, they caught so many fish that their nets were beginning to break. So they signaled their partners in the other boats to come and help them. And they came, and they filled both boats so that they began to sink. But when Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, "Go away from me, Lord, for I am a," what? "I'm a sinful man." On the outside, he looked like he was doing a pretty good job, right? Wasn't he doing the stuff on the outside? Didn't he, after all, put the nets down? And wasn't that good enough? But yet Peter knew in his heart, I really didn't believe you. And I really did not want to follow you, even in doing this in my heart. My actions did. I love reading about this story, because I think what happened to Peter is something that happens to me, and I bet it probably happens to you too. Because what were Peter's words when he said, "Go away from me, Lord"? It's like once his heart was exposed, he thought, "You don't want to be around me. You don't even know what's going on inside of me. If you knew what was going on inside of me, you wouldn't even want me to be your companion. You wouldn't want me to follow you." And I love it. I love it how Jesus responds back to him in verse 10, which is the key for us to stare down our turkeys in the road. And it's this: don't be afraid, is what Jesus tells him. Don't be afraid. Well, we've looked back on it and thought, what do you think Peter was afraid of? Well, he probably was afraid of a lot, but the doubts that he felt inside is what would stop him from following Jesus. And frankly, I think fear is the biggest turkey of all that keeps us from wanting to follow Jesus and wanting to take that next step that he's asking us to take. I got to thinking, what if Peter would not have decided to go out in the deep water? You know, have you ever thought about that? I thought it was an interesting thought. Here's Jesus saying, "Take your water out in a deep water and put down your nets for a catch." And what if Peter said, "No, you can go find somebody else. I'm not going to do that." What would he have missed? Have you ever thought of what Peter might have missed? What are some of the things that come to your mind that he would have missed if he would have just decided, "I'm not going to be a companion with Jesus"? What would Peter have missed? Anything. The what? Maybe his eternity? Yes. I'll list a few. He would have walked on the water. Would have missed out on that. He would have never seen the amazing things that Jesus did by even feeding the 5,000, by seeing amazing stuff that Jesus did. Would have missed out on the transfiguration, which was another amazing experience. But Peter, you know another thing that Peter would have missed? He never would have discovered who he was. He never would have discovered who he was. Because one thing about being a companion with Jesus, he's going to show us who we are as people. He wants to get to our hearts and to truly show us not only who he is, but to show him who we are, to show us who we are. All right. That day I told you I saw those turkeys. I was driving. It's kind of a funny sight seeing it, and I could have hit the gas and just plastered the turkeys, but I decided, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. And so I drove on, and as I went, not more than 2 minutes later, I was driving, and there came a couple of bald eagles just flying right across my path, two of them. And it was one of those days to where the sun was just right, and it was kind of a dark sky, but the sun had lit them both up, and there were two of them, and they just flew right by me. And I thought to myself, man, what a contrast. What, What a contrast to see. And as I thought about, you know, preaching and talking to you today, I thought the alternative to allowing the turkeys in our life, whether it be ourselves, maybe other people, there is another alternative, and that alternative is to follow Jesus and to be his companion. But if you want to flip over, and I'm just going to read this to you, but another passage that really spoke to me through Isaiah chapter 40, verse 28 and following. And I thought about this a lot, because if you're like me, when we're on this journey of following Jesus, there's times when we get stopped dead in our tracks, just like we're stopped dead in the water, because either ourself, maybe something inside of me, maybe another person, whatever it is, it stops us. And sometimes on our journey, we've had it. We're tired, we're worn down, and we just can't take it anymore. And this brought a lot of life, and I felt like the Lord even spoke to me on even seeing those eagles fly over. It was a confirmation of something. And let me just read Isaiah's words to you. Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow weary or tired, and his understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They'll soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary, and they will walk and not be faint. This last week, this has been a tough week. It's been a tough series of time for me ever since Christmas Eve. Actually, my mom and dad live here in town. My mom has osteoporosis, pretty advanced stages, so she barely has to move before she fractures something. And she took a fall on Christmas Eve and fractured another vertebrae in her back. And it's been, from that time up till now, it's been another hospital stay, another surgery. And I think to myself, this is exhausting. My dad, on the other hand, he's in pretty ill health. Dad's 86. Dad's health has just gone down and gone down, and we made the decision. He's got advanced kidney disease, and so the doctors had told us also that his kidneys are at such a precarious place where they would like him to have a kidney dialysis port put in. And Dad just said, I can't do it. It's too much for me to think about doing dialysis. And so what my dad essentially was saying is that I'm just going to face whatever comes. So this last week, we made the call to have him put in for hospice care. And so a few days ago, I think it was Friday, we met with the hospice people to line this up, just to be prepared for what's coming. I never have had to do that before. And it's a lot of, it's hard stuff. It's hard. And you can find yourself getting angry, frustrated, all of the above, and yet, for me, all of those things can also keep me from wanting to follow Jesus, because when you're surrounded by pain, what you can tend to do is to assume that God is not good because he's allowing this stuff to happen to me. And as I've thought about it, as I thought, no, Lord, I want to choose to follow you. I want to choose to believe the best in you, even in these hard situations. And I love it because those that hope in the Lord will renew their strength. And I feel that. But I also feel how hard it is. And that's a part of the journey that we go through too. One of the great things that I'll hold on to is words of Jesus found in Matthew 28:20. He said this, some of his final words. And remember, I am with you always to the end of this age. We can't see Jesus, but but we know His Holy Spirit, and we know His Spirit is around us, and it's real, and we can have a relationship with Jesus today, and we can feel Jesus' presence, even though we can't see Him.